The views and opinions expressed on this show belong solely to the hosts and their guests and do not reflect the views of any on-site institutions unless explicitly stated.
What's up, everybody? My name is Steve Vandewall.
And I'm Justin Klosser.
And we're your hosts of Cannabis Cum Laude, a podcast devoted entirely to cannabis. We're going to talk cultivation, business, medicine, politics, culture, advocacy, and everything in between.
The cannabis industry is complicated. It's robust. It has a lot of moving parts. And it's our job to help you understand it just a little bit better. So tune in every week for a brand new episode. And if you have a question that you'd like answered on the show, send it on over to questions@cannabiscumlaude.com. Thanks. Enjoy the show.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to part two of this week's episode of Cannabis Cum Laude. Justin and I here with Dr. Cody Peterson. And we're talking all about the endocannabinoid system, cannabinoids, terpenes. You're in for a real treat. If you haven't checked out part one, I highly suggest you do it. I think, judging by the looks on both of our faces throughout this episode, that we just got a full lesson. So thank you, Professor. So we touched on a bit about this on part one. What happens exactly to THC from when it's in the flower to when you smoke it to when you eat an edible, and how, you know, there's all these different effects. And it's because there's something really... Something chemically changes to cannabinoids, specifically THC, over the process from flower to edibles. Can you kind of talk about how THC changes during this course of time?
If you don't mind, Cody, I'd like you to actually start a little bit earlier than that, if you don't mind.
I am picking THC. Up what you're putting down. All cannabinoids is where we need to start, right?
Yeah.
Or even prior to that, if you have any info on before it becomes CBG, that'd be cool too.
Yeah, let's start from the very beginning. Okay, so
seed.
So the cannabis plant in veg is not producing very many terpenes, right? You don't get very much sticky icky off of a plant in veg, but when it goes to flower, it's all of a sudden starts to produce these resins. Okay, these resins are used to communicate with pollinators and communicate with other nearby plants, and they're produced to these secondary metabolites for just the plant to thrive. Okay. So if you zoom in on the female cannabis plant, although these are also made in small amounts in male plants, you can find a trichome. A trichome is an appendage sticking off the flower where terpenes and cannabinoids are made. And in fact, it's really the only place in the plant where cannabinoids are made. There's some terpenes in other places. But it's in this trichome where all the magic happens, okay? And this is why if you isolate trichomes and you can eventually squeeze it, you get the best product in the world, right? Ice water hash, this extremely isolated, purified terpene and cannabinoid rich product. Okay, so in the terpene is where these cannabinoids and terpenes are made. So to the beginning of the life cycle for a cannabinoid is you have a molecule inside the plant known as olivetolic acid, and then something known as geranyl diphosphate. And if those two go together, you get a new molecule known as CBGA. This is cannabigerolic acid. Now, a lot of the times on the internet, you'll see that CBG is the mother of all cannabinoids. That is not true. CBGA, CBG acid, is the mother of all cannabinoids, because plants, it turns out, don't make THC, CBD, CBC, or CBG. They just don't. Plants make CBGA, THCA, CBCA. And then humans convert them, or sunlight converts it into the active form of THC, for example. And I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Let's back up to CBGA. So CBGA is produced in the trichome of the flower, and that is also where it's converted into the cannabinoids that you know and love. So CBG can be converted into one of three cannabinoids, or CBGA rather. CBGA can go to THCA, CBDA, or CBCA. So once the CBGA is produced, it can go down one of three paths depending on the genetics of the plant. Steve, the products there, the flowers that you're using to make the products in your CBD brand are producing a lot of CBD, but not a lot of THC. Agreed?
True.
Right. So, but that's just genetics. It's the same plant. Same plant had different genetics, it could look identical, but it could be producing much more THCA and not so much CBDA. Just like the same way that that humans can produce different skin colors, and we're all the same species. Cannabinoids can produce different terpenes or have different colors, right? Purple, etc. So all the same plant just produces different cannabinoids. CBGA is converted to THCA in the flower, and that's generally how it's found when you get the dried cured flower. It's still THCA. I'm just going to follow THC for simplicity from here on out. So when THCA is ground up and packed into a bowl and exposed to high heat, like a lighter or a torch from a dab rig, so to speak, that's when it actually converts from the acid form, known as THCA, to the neutral form, known as regular THC. And that's the one that's psychoactive. So when you actually activate the cannabis when you smoke it. If you're making edibles, this process, known as decarboxylation from THC to THC, actually has to occur in the oven beforehand. Before you make the edibles, you actually have to expose it to heat in a process known as decarb. All right? So once you consume the THC, let's say you smoked a bowl, then that THC is spread throughout the whole body and distributed through the brain, the lungs, and all of your organs, etc. It finds its way to CB1 receptor, CB2, and produces its biologic response. So let's just, for simplicity, call the high. And then the body identifies that as a foreign molecule and says, hey, I'm feeling funny. There's this weird molecule we don't normally have. Let's break it down and destroy it. So then the body will actually take that molecule and start to build on it. And believe it or not, it adds appendages to the THC molecule. And it does that to try to get it to an excretable form. It's trying to add on appendages that will eventually lead it so that you can excrete it through your poop or your pee. Yeah. Believe it or not, most cannabinoids are cleared in your poop. So the body's going to take the THC that's been activated and consumed and start to metabolize it and excrete it. I'm sure we also want to talk about edibles too, but I want to pause for you guys to give me some input.
Yeah, definitely. I do before, I want to touch back on decarb before we move on. There's something that's always kind of puzzled me, right? Now I understand if you're going to be using your butter, as is, right? The need to decarb, but if you're going to then go ahead and infuse this generally you're infusing it at some sort of heated temperature when you're infusing it into butter. And then typically you're going to take that butter or coconut oil or whatever your medium may be and work it into a recipe, right? And typically those recipes are, unless it's some kind of no-bake, going to also be cooked. Now, why is it necessary to decarboxylate beforehand? And like in my head, it seems like that stuff would just happen during the natural cooking process.
Yeah, some of it will. It will partially decarb during the natural process. Your logic is sound, but not all of it. When you're adding it, like let's say you're cooking it in butter, there's like a buffer, like a medium between the heat and the cannabinoids or in the flower, which slows down the decarboxylation as opposed to being exposed to just like dry heat. And really, again, you can absolutely infuse your products with non-decarboxylated cannabis, and you'll decarb a little bit during cooking, but you'll mostly get the acids and that's what you'll be consuming. And that's not actually a problem, but it will not produce the high that consumers are most often looking for. So to answer your question, you don't have to decarb. It's just recommended you do to maximize the potency of the product.
So what are optimal time and temp to decarb in the oven before making butter? Do you have?
There's like a million I feel like recipes I've seen out there, Steve.
Yeah, I know. I've seen a ton.
The thing of it is it depends on a lot of factors, on how old your cannabis is, what the humidity level of your cannabis is, et cetera, that might be the perfect temp. But what I advocate for is not worrying about a perfect conversion, because the acid forms of cannabinoids, THCA, CBDA, et cetera, are also therapeutically active. Even though they don't cause intoxication or they don't get into the brain very well, they're still therapeutically active. So I tell people to not worry too much about if it's the perfect, it's all the way decarbed, you know, taken to the nth degree. And really, the decarb temperature is actually directly dictated by time. So if you do a higher temperature, you can decarb for a shorter time. If you do a lower temperature, you have to decarb for a longer time. And then to add to the complexities, there's also differences in the rate at which THCA decarboxylates compared to CBDA decarboxylation. So in a flower that's super high THCA and doesn't have any other cannabinoids, you can kind of set like, oh yeah, this is your perfect temp, perfect time, or something of the sorts. But if you have a mixed flower, which is pretty common, THCA and CBDA in the same flower, there's really no perfect balance there. If I'm making a recommendation for decarb, let's see, I'm going to decarb around 150 degrees Celsius for an hour. What is that? 300. But there's so many different types. I actually don't want to just spout it off. But follow a recipe and really try not to stress is what I would say is you can decarboxylate some. But I try to encourage people to kind of like take it as it comes. And if you find that your decarb didn't produce the flower you want, then maybe you try a different approach. There's a lot of different methods out there and I don't want to say one is right. There's actually some curves you can look at as well to see like, if it's at this temperature, how many minutes does it take to decarboxylate? Maybe you could give your recommendation, Steve. What would you normally decarboxylate at?
Well, I'm a big proponent of trying to preserve as much as the original chemical profile as possible, and obviously knowing how volatile the terpenes are with heat.
Definitely.
I always like to do lower. You know, I think I don't know what the minimum temperature needed to to remove that the acid group from THC, but I would say whatever that is and whatever the optimal time is, and I'm guessing that you would be able to preserve terpenes because if you fry it for an hour, you're going to smell up the whole house and that smell is volatilizing terpenes and you want
That's
those
your
in your product. So I always am a big proponent of as low and slow. Commercially time is money. So it all depends on, are you making brownies at home for you and your buddies? Are you trying to pump out 1,000 cookies a day at your commercial facility? It's all personal preference. But that's kind of the best thing about it is that, there's a bunch of different ways to skin the cat.
Exactly,
you're spot on.
Before we get inside the liver, I would like to circle back a little bit talking about, I'm a cultivator, so these things like stick in my head as to like where I kind of want to hit. And I feel like we probably have some cultivators that listen. So is there a chemical difference between like, there's two different, correct me if I'm wrong. There's two different kinds of trichomes, right? That are, or maybe even more than that, that are produced on the cannabis plant. But like most notably there's like, all right, so I can think of three, I guess, now that I'm sitting here, is like the sessile glandular trichomes, the stalked glandular trichomes, and then also your little leaf trichomes that are don't really have a gland on the end of them. I guess my big question is those leaf trichomes do those produce just as much cannabinoids as like the glandular ones that are coming on your flower, or are those just kind of I don't know. I don't know how to better word that question. I apologize.
Are they more weight? Do they have a lot of value?
No, you're asking a great question. There are differences in the cannabinoids produced in the type of trichome. So your capitated stock trichomes, the one you think of, right? The one that looks like a little man with a head. Those are producing by far the most cannabinoids. Other trichomes do have functions and they might produce some, but really it's that bulbous head on top of that capitated stalk trichome that is cranking out the vast majority of your cannabinoids and terpenes. But the other terpene or the other types of trichomes do produce some. And importantly, you ask, you said leaf trichomes, and just for the listener's edification, you're not really talking about the sugar leaf, right? That has these capitated ones. Talking about more like a fan leaf or something like that. Yeah, and it looks like got almost little hairs almost. And those are not producing a lot of terpenes and cannabinoids. And there's a bunch of different types of these trichomes. But the vast majority of your cannabinoids are produced in those capitated stock trichomes.
Okay. And real quick follow on for that, since we're on the topic of trichomes. There's a lot of debate in the cannabis world on when a trichome is ripe, right? And obviously that's going to come down to the effect that you want from it. I guess my main curiosity is more informative than anything of like, so trichomes, for those that don't know, follow a typical clear to milky to amber sort of base progression. And maybe I'm missing okay. Yep.
No, you got it.
So what do those colors signify, I guess, is more so like, is that amber, is that because there's now, I guess I'm getting ahead of our conversation, but is that because it's now degraded to CBN, or like, does that amber signify CBN, or is it just it's amber because it's breaking down? Like, I don't know.
These are really good questions, Justin, and questions that I want to study, frankly. Like, this infatuates me. But we know that in the early phase, in the early stage, those trichomes are mostly CBG. So they've made the CBG, but it hasn't fully converted it to its end cannabinoids like THCA or CBDA. And so what you're seeing as the trichome ages and it goes from clear, which is probably mostly CBG, and then it converts to THCA, and then going to amber, there could be even more degradation of some of those cannabinoids from being exposed to the light and the environment and the oxygen, that they are ripening and aging. And yeah, there might be some CBN, which is a THC degradation in those products, but mostly it's probably just THCA as it's milky, and then ambering, it might be actually just turning into THC. Because the plant, even though the plant doesn't produce THC, it produces THCA. In that trichome, there can be degradation to THC. And so, yes, it's a ripening. But this is a question I ponder regularly, is like, if we started harvesting a week earlier, what's the cannabinoid profile of that plant? And questions that I don't have the answer to, unfortunately.
I'm really glad that you said that actually about the THC, because that was another question and I felt like I was kind of hogging the stage here, but I have seen THC show up on HPLC results. And so when I kind of wanted to circle back to like, how come that's in there, but you answered it already. So thank you.
Well, natural degradation. The plant just doesn't have an enzyme to produce THC. It has the enzyme to convert from CBGA to THCA, but then natural processes lead to the production of THC and even CBN.
Beautiful.
This is kind of for my own personal interest, because I do make a sleep product, a CBD-based sleep product, but CBN is now emerging as this new sleep-based cannabinoid. And quite frankly, I'm a little bit uneducated on it. Can you give me like a quick, like, what is the research saying about CBN and sleep? Is it truly an effective sleep aid, as people say? Is it another bro science marketing thing that a lot of these companies are using? Which, hey, you know, I'm not knocking anybody by any means, but there's a lot of that going on. What is the relationship between CBN and sleep?
Such a good question. controversial, but generally speaking, we don't have science to support all the stuff that people are saying. Yeah. But I would say this, is THC a good sleep aid? Probably. I mean, it's not always effective, right? But generally, tiredness is probably one of the most commonly reported side effects, particularly of high doses of THC, especially for those that are cannabis naive and not as tolerant as someone like Justin over here. And so CBN is a natural degradation product of THC, and it does also seem to carry this sort of sedative, relaxing, tiring effect. Now, if you want to get to the science, there was a rumor started about 10 years ago by Steep Hill Laboratories where they said, oh, here we go, the CBN is the sleepy molecule. And the industry ran with it. And they have redacted, essentially, that statement that they made. And what we have now is a lot of marketing and very little science. And so if you look, other than maybe one study where they combine CBN with a really potent narcotic known as phenobarbital or pentobarbital, we have very little science to support that CBN is an effective sleep aid, except for the fact that we know that THC influences sleep. And in fact, there was just a article I read today about how in women, chronic THC consumption is actually associated with poorer sleep quality. And again, it might be self-medication. That's a correlation, not a causation. But for sure, there's a lot of hype and very little science.
Yeah, I'm always trying to stay up to date with products and like making sure I'm using the most emerging technology. And, you know, I have a great sleep formulation right now. And I'm like, you know, do I dabble with CBN? Do I want to change a formulation? I'm seeing all this stuff. But, you know, I try to stay up on the research as much as I can. And just nothing has come out and said, here it is. Not that we'll ever, you know, get a direct answer. This is such a new industry. But, you know, we're getting a lot of research coming out about the efficacy of CBD, especially in the context of inflammation, THC and nausea and fibromyalgia and all this stuff. So I'm waiting for this CBN research to come out, but it really hasn't yet. It is, I was worried a little bit more marketing than anything, but also to the defense of the industry, it has been built on anecdote. You could, you know, we could all go out and find 30 people at least that says THC has made my life better in this way and this way, and you got to respect it. So I do believe there's probably something, but you know, when you're trying to build something on science, it's, you got to kind of stick to what, you know, the research says. But anyway, I digress.
And there's science, just to point out real quick, there's science that is being, they're studying this, right? There are companies studying this. And then, in addition to that, CBN is being applied for other diseases and unrelated to sleep altogether. So there are topical formulations and even ocular eye drops for glaucoma made out of CBN that is in a clinical trial right now. They're looking to, you know, get FDA approval. So, you know, there's a lot to this cannabis science thing, but unfortunately not a lot of science to support the sleep.
So we kind of got away, and I'm sure to nobody's surprise, largely to my fault, from what the main goal that we really wanted to get across, I think on this part of our discussion. And I'm one of these people, let me just preface that. There's many people who claim that edibles just don't get them high, right? And I feel like I experienced this. I won't say that I don't think that they affect me, because I tend to have a hard time waking up in the morning after an edible night, if you will. However, I've never ate an edible and been like, oh, I feel funny, or oh, I need to go to the ER like a lot of these other people do. And so I was just wondering, is that a real thing, or am I just crazy? I don't think it's a tolerance thing, right? Because doesn't it change to a different cannabinoid? So like, can you explain how that works for me?
Sure. There's definitely tolerance involved, Justin. It's involved. I'm not saying that's the only reason, but there's another factor that goes into this, and this is all of our own livers. So unlike THC or THCA, when we smoke it and turn it to THC, and then it goes as THC to the rest of our body, that's not what happens with anything we eat. We evolved to have a liver to filter everything we take through our mouths, because we used to, like, you know, pick a berry and be like, oh, I'm starving in the wild and I'm going to eat this, right? And we had a liver to filter out any maybe harmful toxins that we got. And again, as much as we think of THC as like this natural, all great and mighty chemical, the body still recognizes it as foreign and it wants to filter it and get rid of it as soon as it can. That's just what the body does. And so the body actually takes the cannabinoids that you produce, it absorbs it with the other fats in the meal, right? Which is a big factor. A lot of people are taking edibles on an empty stomach. You're going to get even 3 or 4 times more absorption if you take your oral cannabis product with a high fat snack than if you take it on an empty stomach. So there's number one. So absorption is a big factor. So you mentioned dosing and tolerance. Okay, so already absorption, let's say it's only 10 to 20%. 80% of the THC that you consumed was changed in the body and never made it into the blood because of these limited absorption. Then your body actually sends it through the liver and it does what's called a bioconversion or metabolism. And it takes THC, it adds an hydroxy group to the 11 carbon, 11 hydroxy THC. This cannabinoid metabolite, THC metabolite, really, that's only produced in the body, not in the plant, is actually known to be more psychoactive or to produce more psychoactivity than THC. But it still does so by engaging with the CB1 receptor, the receptor that after chronic cannabis consumption, you downregulate. So tolerance is still very much a factor, but it's different for everyone. Interestingly, women tend to get more pronounced effects from enteral cannabis, from oral cannabis, excuse me. Go ahead, Justin.
Yes, I have a question, teacher. Oh. I did read an article actually somewhere because I was curious for my own sake. Like I said, I feel like I experienced this. That said that some people's metabolism is so high that it actually breaks down the 11-hydroxy before it has a chance to interact with CB1 receptors. I don't think that was scientifically published. I think it was just random daily press or what, you know what I mean? Like just some random internet article. Is there any truth to that? Does that make sense? Or like,
yeah, definitely. There's all sorts of drugs that we have in the human body, like codeine, for an example, an opioid. Some people, when they take codeine, they get very pronounced effects. Some people actually convert codeine very rapidly in the liver to morphine, and they get too much codeine. So all of us have different livers that process things differently and different enzymes. It's based on the foods we eat, the genetics we have, and which things we've been consuming, which other drugs and substances, et cetera. So that's very much a thing, and you'll see variability between patients. But I want to point out one real quick thing that's probably, you know, a big part of what you're describing. It sounds like you can tolerate pretty hefty doses of a cannabinoid like THC. If you're going to smoke, you're probably putting a gram of pretty high quality flower into a joint or a blunt and having no problem smoking that yourself and feeling just regular high, like maybe not even high. And so that dose of cannabinoids, if let's pretend it's 30%, a 1 gram joint contains 300 milligrams. Let's say you only absorb 10 to 20%. That's still 30 or 60 milligrams that gets exposed to the whole body. Now, pretend for a second that an oral cannabis product, which is not absorbed well and highly metabolized, you might not, in order to get 60 milligrams of THC into your body, you're probably going to need to take 300 milligrams of edibles, right? Because you're already very tolerant to the high doses of cannabinoids. And I did some funky math there, and it's not important, but definitely tolerance is a major factor in how you respond to edibles, even though it's different. And some individuals, again, based on factors we're still trying to understand, feel much more pronounced effects from edibles, and that is a multifactorial process.
It's just such a bummer, right? I see all these memes that are like, oh, as soon the as edibles. You start talking shit, then the edibles smack. And I'm every time I take an edible, I'm like talking shit as soon as it happens because I'm just waiting to get hit in the face. And you just kind of broke my heart that might never be a thing for me.
Okay. I think you're just going to have to go out to Colorado, get one of those 1,000 mixed brownies. That's the only way.
The other thing I will point out is that as technology advances and we get to a point that maybe we can put something under our tongue that skips really well absorbed or nasally or something like that. It's possible that you'll be able to get different effects more rapidly from like a microemulsion, etc. But it won't be the same effects as the 11-hydroxy, which is only produced by the liver. And so I guess it is possible that you might have a makeup there where that doesn't happen. But I would also, if you wanted to experience this, Justin, I would challenge you to take your tolerance break and then reintroduce your cannabis edible in a week or two. And I have a strong inclination that you would have a very different experience.
Probably. That would be a really tough week, though. I mean,
I don't know if I'd want to be anybody
in my circle.
Well,
for sure.
We're coming up towards the end of our episode. This has been very educational. Very informative, cleared up a lot of questions that I know what I personally had, and thank you for that, because you get to a point when you know something about a subject and you know there's just so much content out there and blogs and quite frankly bullshit, and you get to a point where you don't really trust anybody and you want to like talk to somebody who actually knows and you know And, you know, that's how I found you. I follow you on LinkedIn very closely. You always are putting out excellent, excellent educational content. That's why you're a perfect fit for the show. And I hope this is the first of multiple podcasts, because I could think of 100 different things I'd like to talk to you about. For the that's sake for sure. of time and getting Fitz home to his wife and kids in a timely fashion, we had to stick to a little bit of a couple questions today. But I want to know, quickly, what are you most excited about currently in the field of medical cannabis?
Most excited? Look, I think that we're at a point in time where legalization can come, right? But my focus and what I really want and my whole shtick is that cannabis is medicine, right? So let's legalize it, because get the hell out of my garden, Mr. Uncle Sam. But we need to preserve the sanctity of cannabis as medicine. And so I'm most excited, or I'm most engaged in trying to develop a framework so that medical patients with real medical needs have access to real medical professionals. And so that's really where my focus is. It's not that I think that we shouldn't be able to consume cannabis and that you need to talk to a pharmacist. That's not it at all. But if your grandmother, who's on 8 prescription medications, has a medical need, she should be able to access someone like me. And people who have my degree should also be appropriately trained to help triage these questions and help improve quality of life in complex patients. So I'm excited to see academia joining the fight. I'm excited to see healthcare professionals rushing to the front line to support individuals and cultivators who have been telling everyone that this is medicine, that this we can use this help and help the world. And I'm excited to see the change that happens. But I'm expecting a fight. Large cannabis cultivation MSOs, LPs, et cetera, they're not interested in bringing me into the fold. And so not all of them, of course, but I think that that's the fight that we're coming up on. And what I want to see is a bifurcated market. Certainly, you should be allowed to consume cannabis as an adult. There's no doubt about it. Grow it at home, all the above. But if you have a real medical need, you should have access to real medical professionals.
Absolutely.
And real 100% clean medicine, as it were. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we did an episode a few weeks back. I apologize, Fitz, but we did an episode a few weeks back with actually a couple months now with Leaf Medic, who told us that they are experiencing people getting recommendations who are then having their primary care physicians actually removing some of their critical medications from their prescription list, not because the cannabis has replaced it, but because they would refuse to give them life necessary, like blood pressure medication, because they're using cannabis. That's crazy. And we just need to, I 100% am with you that we need to be able to get these patients access to be able to, like, yeah, cannabis is medicine. Yeah, it does a lot of things, but there's some things that it doesn't do either, right? And you should be able to take care of all of your issues if you want, right? And if cannabis is the best medicine for some of it, it shouldn't prevent you from using the other medicine. So I absolutely 100% sure. applaud for your sure. vision and right there
Thank
with you.
Thank you, Justin. I appreciate it. This is, simply put, is, in the United States, every prescription medication, every medication recommended by a doctor, you are legally not just entitled, but like I'm bound to speak to you. I must offer you counsel. And then when it comes to cannabis, the doctor's not even allowed to write a prescription, and then they send you off to a bud tender. Not that the bud tender is not serving an important role. In fact, it's an extra important role in the current state of affairs, but they just don't have the skill set that a doctor of pharmacy does, coupled with my master's degree in medical cannabis science. And some patients require more than what the average bud tender can offer. And I think most bud tenders would agree. When people come in and start talking about their prescriptions, they're like, I can't help you.
And they shouldn't. I'm sure they want to, but you can't, be giving advice to somebody because it could have some, negative repercussions. So, sure. I think bud tenders would very much agree. We want to be educated not only on, plant properties, but on medical properties. Because still the physicians, want to come in and play that role. We're stuck to bro science or, kind of asking friends when we need to be talking to people like you. Speaking of talking to people like you, where can people find you?
Well, as the same place you found me is the best place. I'm super active on LinkedIn. I'm trying to build a community around this message on there. So please follow me on there. You see my name below. It is very much that. I'm also on Instagram, Cannabis PharmD. So that's my degree preceded by your favorite plant. And then I'm on TikTok too. And I don't do any dance videos. Sorry to disappoint. But I do try to educate on there as well. And that's Canna Farm D. So the first part of your favorite plant. I do have a website. It is in construction. This will be the first time I plug it. So that's Farm D approved. So once again, my title, and that's approved. You won't find very much, just a picture of this ugly mug. But soon I will have blogs. I will have links to all of my writings because I do professional writing. And then I want to plug my employer. I work for a startup known as The Canigma. That's C-A-N-N-I-G-M-A. And I do a lot of writing for them. We're putting out some really awesome content. And if you're kind of curious, this is the place for you. So definitely check out thekenigma.com.
Yeah, we'll put all those links in the show notes as well so that people are able to get there easily. Thank you so much, Cody. This has been an awesome talk today. And I don't think I'm alone when I say that I wish we could just keep talking for another three hours. But
yeah, I do too. I think this means that we should have some more episodes. I think we should sit down and do this again. There's a lot of questions, you know, in this field. This is something where people are getting very curious. People who never thought they would ever consume cannabis are now actively seeking out cannabis, not just for recreation, but for therapeutic or therapeutic reasons and to improve their life. And I think if we could have a platform where we can continue to talk about this, this is where kind of that, you know, where we start to grow the industry. So thank you so much for coming on the show. I know you're a very busy man, but thank you again. You are a wealth of knowledge, and I think I speak for both of us. We look forward to the next time.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to round two, gentlemen. Thanks so much for your time.
Have fun at work, Cody, and remember to elevate your mind, people.
We'll see you next week. Thanks to our friends here at Rockbox Recording and Production in Rochester, New York. They are a full professional podcast and video studio designed by a radio guy for podcasters. Audio, video, voiceovers, editing, whatever. Mouth off at Rockbox at rockbox.com.
You can follow Cannabis Cum Laude on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Cannabis. Type Cannabis Cum Laude into your search bar and you should be able to find us, but the links will also be posted in the episode notes as well. If you want to help support the show, head on over to Patreon, and that will ensure that we're able to keep the best quality sound and video coming to you on a regular basis. And if you liked what you heard today, please don't forget to rate and review the show.